Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, your multidimensional RPG podcast. Hello, fellow gamer. Welcome to episode 227 of Game Master's Journey. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. On this show, we discuss the craft and the art of game mastering. I've been running RPGs for over 26 years now, and I produce this show in the hopes that you can benefit from my experience, my triumphs, and my mistakes. I've got a great episode for you today. We're going to take a break from the actual play, and we're going to take a break from our series on the Dungeon Master's Guide. And instead, what I want to do today is talk a little bit about vision and light, daytime and night in your RPG, and specifically in D&D. But a lot of this discussion is just going to be how we handle vision or the lack of it in our games. But before we get to our main topic today, I do have a few announcements I want to make. I'd like to remind you that my newest D&D supplement, Relics of Power, is now available for you to check out at starwalkerstudios.com. And thank you to everyone who's checked out either Relics of Power or my D&D adventure, The Trickster's Labyrinth. I really, really appreciate it. So Relics of Power is simply a new type of magic item you can add to your D&D game that scales in power with the level of the player character wielding it. And I describe how you can create your own relics from scratch, how you can convert existing magic items into relics. And finally, I give you a dozen examples to kind of show the concept in action and get you started. Among those dozen relics that I provide you with are the ones that the player characters have in my current campaign, Hinterlands of Alandria. So if you've been listening to the actual play, then you've seen some of those relics in action. Also want to let you know that I have finished re-releasing all of the older episodes of Game Master's Journey back on the website. So for a while, the older archived episodes were available only to patrons, but they're now available to everyone for free. There are only 100 episodes in the RSS feed that your podcast app is using to pull episodes into. My RSS can only hold 100 items. So I have the 100 most recent episodes, as well as some of the greatest hits of Game Master's Journey in that feed. However, if you head on over to starwalkerstudios.com/Game Master's Journey, all the rest of the episodes are there all the way back to episode one. You can listen to them on the website, you can download them from there, or whatever you want to do. Also, if you are a patron of Star Walker Studios at the $5 level or higher, patrons do get access to a private RSS feed only for patrons, and I am working on getting that feed caught up. I'm only a few episodes behind on that feed, so that feed does go all the way back to the first episode. So if you have access to that, you can subscribe to that feed with your app, and you will be able to get all the episodes that way. That feed also includes the GM Intrusions episodes, as well as the Patron Cast, which is a podcast I used to do just for the patrons, as well as various bits of bonus audio content. And what I'm hoping to accomplish in the next couple months is to get the patron feed caught up. So those of you who are patrons can use that feed if you prefer, and have everything in one place. And an idea I'm considering is those times when I have episodes produced ahead of the release date, I could possibly upload those to the patron feed as well, so that the patrons can get kind of early access to the new episodes. So if that's something you'd be interested in, let me know. Speaking of feedback, another idea that I would really like your feedback on is whether or not you would be interested in a book on GMing by yours truly. So this is something that's come up a few times in a few different ways from different listener GMs, suggesting that I kickstart something, that I do some kind of game supplement, and that I do some kind of general guide for GMs. And the vast majority of the feedback that I get for this show is in the form of questions. Most of those questions from newer or brand new GMs, but even occasionally I get questions from more experienced GMs. And in fact, our topic today about vision and light was spurred by some questions from a listener GM. So seems like there's a lot of interest or a lot of desire out there for more material on how do I actually run a game as a GM. And I've done a lot in 227 episodes of Game Master's Journey, as well as 70 odd episodes of GM Intrusions. So over 300 episodes of podcasts about GMing. I've covered a lot of topics. So I think if I just took everything I've discussed on the podcast and collated it and condensed it, that'd be a pretty decent tome right there. And then there are additional things I'd love to talk about that I haven't talked about on the podcast before. For instance, one of the ideas for a smaller supplement that I put forward to you was doing a supplement on how I handle cursed items and some thoughts and guidelines on how to use cursed items in your game in a way that enhances the game for the players and doesn't make them hate you and hate the cursed item. So it occurs to me, if I do this GM book, that'd make a great chapter in the GM book instead of being all on its lonesome. Similarly, another PDF I've been kicking around putting out is something on my flexible encounters, which is kind of my approach or my replacement for random encounters. And that would make a great section in the book as well. So I will have a link in the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney to a post in our Google Plus community about this. Or you can feel free to email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. And what I'm looking for is, first of all, would you be interested in a product like this? Second of all, what topics would you like this book to cover? The more ideas I get from you about topics that you want covered or questions you want answered in this book, the more complete of a resource for GMs that it can be. And I want to be clear, although there will be parts of the book that are targeting brand new GMs or newer GMs, I envision this as being a resource for all GMs. And I'm thinking right now, probably the way I would lay it out is, the beginning of the book would be for the beginners. And then as we get further through the book, we get into more advanced topics. So, you know, it's something I would want to be useful to GMs of all experience levels. So this isn't just something for brand new or newer GMs. It's something for all GMs. So the more ideas I get from you as far as topics you want covered or questions you want answered, the more complete this can be and the better it will be. And I'm also trying to get a feel for how many people would actually be interested in this, because if this is something I do, it's something that I will most likely kickstart, and I want to be sure that there's at least some interest before I put all the time into developing a Kickstarter campaign for it. I want to know that it has a decent chance of funding if I'm gonna do that. So please let me know if you're interested and any ideas you have for what you'd like such a book to cover. And finally, at the top of the show today, I want to greet and thank some new patrons of Starwalker Studios. So huge thank you and shout out to Matthias, Jessica, and Ronnie. Thank you so much for becoming patrons. I really, really appreciate it. So that's it for our announcements today. So without further ado, let's transition into our topic of vision and light, daylight and night. So today I thought we'd talk a little bit about vision and light, and conversely, the lack of vision and light in role-playing games, and specifically, as our example today, in 5th edition D&D. As I mentioned before, this has come from some feedback that I received on the show. I received an email from a listener GM asking about this topic, and this listener GM has requested that I not share their name just in case their players might be listening. We don't want to give anything away about the campaign or anything like that. So I will definitely respect that. And so this person wrote in and says, "Hey, Lex, I have some questions about how you use light and vision in your games. Do you pay attention to your character's vision abilities, for example, dark vision, and where light is located? If so, how do you go about keeping track of everything? Is it even worth it?" So those are all great questions, and I'll answer those to the best of my ability. But this listener GM goes on to say, "When I try to implement anything like that, my players tend to complain and get grumpy. Here's some examples from a couple sessions ago. So the PCs are going down a path at night. They're carrying light sources that spread light in a 20-foot radius and then dim light for another 20 feet beyond that. But there's also thick foliage and underbrush that blocks the last 10 feet of that dim light. So what this person is saying is basically they have enough light to see out to 40 feet, but they can really only see out 30 feet because of the undergrowth and stuff that limits line of sight. So some NPCs or some monsters or whatever start shooting at the PCs with crossbows. So one of the characters who isn't using a light source, presumably has dark vision or something, moves into the trees and gets out of the light to see if they can see what's going on. However, they fail their perception check, and now it's back to the NPC's turn, and one of them shoots this player character that went off by himself. And so the player was unhappy with this for some reason. I'm not sure why it's not stated here, but the DM says that, "Hey, you were looking into darkness with no light source or dark vision." Oh, okay, so this character does not have dark vision. But the player thought, well, they're right here, they're close by or whatever. So the player felt they should have been able to see these NPCs. So then another player who does have dark vision makes a perception check, and the DM says, "You know, well, you did kind of see the general area that these two crossbow bolts came from." So next, this player character tries to attack where he thought these crossbow bolts came from and rolled a 20. So the DM ruled that the attack missed, and the player argued that a natural 20 is always a hit. The DM explained that the NPC had moved since they shot the crossbow, and so they weren't anywhere near where the PC was attacking, so there's no way they could have hit, and so natural 20 doesn't matter. The player argues that they had dark vision, so they should have been able to see this. And the DM says, "Well, dark vision doesn't let you see through the thick underbrush." And then the player gets upset and pouts and says, "Oh, my dark vision is useless." So these are great examples and are illustrating a few things here that are going on. And first of all, I'll say, well, first of all, the GM's always right. But second of all, the GM's also right in this situation, I think, as far as how this DM is interpreting the rules of D&D as they're written and how this DM is refereeing what's going on. I mean, everything the DM is saying here makes perfect sense to me, lines right up with the rules, and sounds completely solid all the way down the line. So I don't think there's any issue here of the DM not using the rules properly or not knowing the rules or not being consistent or anything like that. So let's dig into this email and let's dig into these examples a little bit and see what we can uncover. So first of all, I want to tell you that I did cover this topic of vision and light before, When I was discussing Chapter 8 of the Player's Handbook, which covers this, and we'll probably reference that a little bit at some point today. But if you want to go check out that episode, that was episode 142, and I'll have that linked in the show notes. So first of all, before I address the more general topics that this listener asked at the beginning, as far as, you know, do I keep track of this kind of stuff and how do I deal with it? Before we get into that more general discussion, let's tackle these specific examples here and let's kind of take this apart so that all of us as GMs can kind of understand how this works and understand the reasoning. And also, you know, any players listening can more understand how this all works. So there's two main things to keep in mind here in this scenario that's being described. First of all, the player characters are moving in darkness. They don't all have dark vision, and they are using light sources to light their way. So that's the first main thing to keep in mind. The second thing is that there's more going on to limit vision here than just the darkness. There's also a lot of underbrush and foliage and things that NPCs can hide within that even if it were broad daylight would make it difficult to see. So both those things are at play here. So we got to keep all that in mind. So first thing that happens is the player characters start getting shot at by crossbows. And one of the player characters who does not have dark vision, I'm wondering why someone with dark vision didn't do this, but one of the player characters who does not have dark vision moves away. I'm assuming that they moved far enough away that they're out of the light so that they could actually see in the darkness. And then they make a perception check to see if they notice where this NPC that's shooting at him with crossbows is. They fail that check, which means they don't see anything. And at this point, the player starts complaining. Well, first of all, you failed the check. Even in broad daylight, the DM may ask for a perception check to see if you notice something. And if you fail that check, you don't notice it. Now, that doesn't matter if you're making a check to see if you notice a trap that's well hidden, if you're making a check to see if you notice the goblin who hid under a bush. It doesn't matter. The DM gives you a perception check to make, gives you a DC. Either they tell you what that difficulty number is or they don't, but there is a difficulty number. And if you roll beneath that number, you fail the check. You fail to see what happened. So as far as that right there, the darkness, vision, dark vision, that's all confusing the issue. All that matters here is the player character made a perception check. They didn't succeed at the check, so they didn't notice anything. It's pretty cut and dry. So the player is welcome to be upset about that, but it's a silly thing to complain about. That's just how the game works. You don't succeed at everything you try to do. It doesn't matter that they're, quote, right there, which was the player's argument. Oh, they're close by. I should see them. It's like, well, someone can roll a stealth check and hide right next to you and you don't see them. It's the same kind of thing. You failed to check. You failed to check. So then the listener GM says that he or she ruled that didn't work. And now the player pouts. So players, don't pout. Things don't go your way. Don't pout. Come on. So then we have another player who does have dark vision, makes a perception check from the path from within the light, I assume, to see what's going on. Now, first of all, before I go into this, one other thing that I forgot about this first player, the listener GM doesn't say whether they gave them disadvantage on this check or not. And I think they should have definitely had disadvantage on this check for a couple reasons. First of all, they're in either darkness or dim light at this point, which, well, if they're in darkness, they can't see anything and they shouldn't have even, well, they could have made a check that wasn't vision based, like to see if they hear something, but they shouldn't have even been able to make a check if they're in total darkness and they can't see as far as being able to see something. But I'll assume that they were still in the dim light so they could see a little bit. But I would have given them disadvantage on that check. Well, first of all, they're in dim light, which automatically gives you disadvantage. Anytime you're in dim light, it's considered lightly obscured, which means you get disadvantage on all wisdom perception checks that involve sight. So they would have just flat out by the rules had disadvantage to begin with. But even if not, I would have still given them disadvantage because they just moved from an area of light, moved into an area of darkness or dim light, and now they're trying to see something in the darkness. And any one of you who's ever been in an area that's lit up and then gone into an area of darkness, like into a dark room, you know that your eyes don't instantaneously adjust to the darkness, that it takes quite some time, even a minute or more, before you can see anything in the dark as your eyes adjust. Remember, a round in D&D is 6 seconds long. So if this is happening, you know, kind of in combat time, you know, this player moves into the darkness or into the dim light, and within 6 seconds thinks that they should be able to see someone hiding in the darkness. And, you know, again, I probably, I might have just said, you know, you don't need to make a check because it's impossible and you can't roll to do something impossible. Or I would have just given it a really high DC, like a DC 20, and given them disadvantage on the check. But yeah, that's highly unlikely, if not flat out impossible, that you could move from an area of light into darkness and within 10 seconds think that you could see something in the darkness. It takes longer than that for your eyes to adjust. So there's a bunch of reasons why it makes perfect sense that perception check failed, and a reasonable player should understand that. And if they don't, the GM should explain it to them. And this is something I'll talk about later in the show. A lot of people actually don't understand how darkness and light and vision and all this stuff works. Especially people who've lived their lives in cities tend to not necessarily understand all this. So that could be the case, in which case, you know, you can explain to your players how it really works in the real world. All right, so moving on to the next part of the scenario here, you have the player who has dark vision, does a perception check from the path where they're in the light, and then it doesn't say if that check was successful. I'll assume that perception check was successful. So then the DM, it looks like, says there's a couple spots that they think the shots might have come from. They attack one of those areas. They roll a natural 20. The DM says they missed. The player's like, WTF, a natural 20 only always hits. And the DM says, well, the NPC moved from that spot before you attacked, so it missed because they weren't there. So, you know, this is a whole nother scenario here. And again, you know, right out the gate, really simply, I think the perception check should have automatically failed. Because if this player character is standing in a lit area, I would say, at least, and this is something we'll talk about later, this is one of my assumptions about how dark vision works, I would assume that you can't use dark vision when you're in a lit area. It doesn't work that way. Like, you know, you can't see with dark vision when you're in a well-lit area. So first, the player character would have had to move to where they were in darkness and not looking toward the light to be able to even use their dark vision to try to find the NPC. And even then, if they'd done that, they still would have been a disadvantage at the check, because if you look at the rules on dark vision, when you're using dark vision, you can see in total darkness as if it were dim light. You can't see in total darkness as if it were bright light. You see in total darkness as if it were dim light. And if you remember, we just talked about, when you're in an area that's lit by dim light, it's considered lightly obscured, which means you have disadvantage on all wisdom perception checks that involve sight. So even a character with dark vision in total darkness is still at disadvantage to all perception checks that use sight, because that's how it works. So even if they moved out of the light into the darkness to do this, they still would have been at disadvantage on that check if the DM was running completely by the book. Which I'm suspecting the DM wasn't giving disadvantage on the check because they didn't mention that. In which case, you know, it's even less cool for the player to complain and pout, because it's like, well, I actually made this easier than I should have. You know, I mean, give me a break. All right. So there's that. And then there's the whole thing of, they make the perception check. They think they know where the PC is. They attack that spot. They roll a natural 20. But they miss because the character isn't there. So again, they should have had disadvantage on the attack roll as well, because anytime you're attacking someone who's invisible or whom you can't see, you have disadvantage on the attack roll if you need to be able to see them, which for pretty much anything that you roll an attack roll, you have to be able to see them. So they should have had disadvantage on the attack roll to begin with, in which case the natural 20 doesn't matter unless they rolled two natural 20s. But even if the DM doesn't give them disadvantage on the attack roll, the natural 20 still doesn't matter if you're attacking the wrong spot. So the way invisibility works is if I want to attack someone who's invisible, I first have to guess where they are. So if we're using a grid, I have to tell the DM, I think this creature is in this particular square and that's where I'm attacking. Then I make the attack roll with disadvantage. I only have a possibility of hitting if I'm attacking the right spot. So if the creature isn't in the square that I chose, even if they're in the square right next to it, it doesn't matter what I roll on the attack roll because they're not there. So even if I roll two 20s and I get a crit, it doesn't matter because I'm attacking the wrong spot. And that's how invisibility works. And I would say that's how it works with any time that you can't see someone. Like, for instance, it's dark and you can't see. All right. So if you're wondering where these rules come from, they come from page 183 of the Player's Handbook, the section Vision and Light. So it says here, a given area might be lightly or heavily obscured. In a lightly obscured area, such as dim light, patchy fog, or moderate foliage, all of these, except for the fog, would apply here. So it's lightly obscured because it's dim light. It's also lightly obscured because of the foliage. In all those situations, if it's lightly obscured, creatures have disadvantage on wisdom perception checks that rely on sight. So even if this were the broad of day, the fact that these NPCs are hiding in the underbrush means that they're lightly obscured, means that you have disadvantage on that perception check to see them. That's not even factoring in what they may be rolled on their stealth check that's defining the DC that you have to roll. So not only do you have to hit the DC of either their passive stealth or what they rolled on the stealth check to see them, you're at disadvantage on that roll because they're lightly obscured, because they're either in dim light or they're in underbrush hiding, or both. A heavily obscured area, such as darkness, opaque fog, or dense foliage, blocks vision entirely. Let me say that again. A heavily obscured area blocks vision entirely. A creature effectively suffers from the blinded condition when trying to see something in that area. So in this situation, if the DM rules that the underbrush is thick enough that it heavily obscures them, then it blocks vision entirely, and the player characters trying to attack these guys are considered to be blinded. So let's check out the blinded condition really quick and see what that does for us. All right, so blinded. A blinded creature can't see and automatically fails any ability check that requires sight. So that means if you're in the darkness, you don't have dark vision, and you're trying to perceive something using sight, you automatically fail. You don't even get a roll for that. It's an automatic fail. Also, when blinded, attack rolls against the creature have advantage, and the creature's attack rolls have disadvantage. So if you don't have dark vision, you're in total darkness, you're blinded. Anyone else around you who can see, they do have dark vision, has advantage to hit you with their attacks, and you have disadvantage on all of your attacks because you are blinded. So the presence or absence of light in an environment creates three categories of illumination. So this is how we break it down in D&D. We've got bright light, dim light, and darkness. Bright light, everything's great, you can see normally. Dim light, also called shadows, creates a lightly obscured area. So that's where this is coming from. So anytime you're talking dim light, lightly obscured, disadvantage on perception checks using sight. An area of dim light is usually a boundary between a source of bright light, such as a torch, and the surrounding darkness. The soft light of twilight and dawn also counts as dim light. A particularly brilliant full moon might bathe the land in dim light. So, for instance, in my world of Primordia, most nights are considered dim light because there are so many stars and nebulas and galaxies and stuff in the sky that it's always dim light. It's like a full moon here on Earth. And then we have darkness. Darkness creates a heavily obscured area. Characters face darkness outdoors at night, even most moonlit nights, within the confines of an unlit dungeon, etc. So yeah, there's really, that's it. That's your darkness and vision lights in D&D. It's really simple. If it's dim light, then it's considered lightly obscured and you have disadvantage on wisdom perception checks using sight. If it's total darkness and you don't have dark vision, it's considered heavily obscured and you're considered to be blind, which means you have disadvantage on all attack rolls, and attacks against you have advantage if the person attacking you can see, and the darkness blocks your vision entirely. So, you know, a permutation of this to consider is if we're talking about player characters going down the road at night or going through a dungeon in darkness and they're using torches to light their way, keep in mind that them looking into the darkness beyond their torchlight, it's darkness, it's heavily obscured, they're considered to be blinded when it comes to seeing anything beyond the radius of their torchlight. But keep in mind that anything out in the darkness trying to target the player characters, even if they don't have dark vision, are not considered blinded. The player characters are not considered heavily obscured because the player characters are in bright light. So I can be out in the darkness outside the radius of your torchlight with my longbow and shoot at you all day long. I have no disadvantage. I have no penalties whatsoever, because even though I'm in darkness and I can't see around me, you're in bright light and I can see you perfectly. And, you know, as long as there's not anything between me and you that would block my arrow, then I'm going to be able to hit you. And if there were something in between me and you that could block my arrow, then it would block my line of sight to you and I wouldn't be able to see you unless it were a pane of glass, in which case we wonder, why is there a pane of glass in the middle of the wilderness? But anyway, you see my point. And again, when you're dealing with a situation where you can't see your opponent, whether it's because your opponent is invisible or whether it's because you're in total darkness and your opponent is heavily obscured, it's not enough just to make that roll with advantage and hit their armor class. You also have to be able to guess correctly where they are. And if you're attacking in the wrong spot, it doesn't matter what you roll, you're going to miss. So that's just the way the game works. That's by the rules. Rules as written, rules as intended. Jeremy Crawford has discussed this on the Sage Advice segment of the Dragon Talk podcast. He had a discussion about how invisibility works and attacking things that are invisible, and it covers all this. And another thing I want to point out really quickly, kind of a tangential but related thing here, is pay attention to your spell descriptions, because unlike in some previous editions of the game, spells do not automatically require line of sight or visibility of your target. You need to look at your spell description very carefully, unless the spell specifically says you have to be able to see your target, then you don't. So a perfect example is the cleric spell Sacred Flame, which is a cantrip, I believe, and does not require you to see your target. And so you can use Sacred Flame on someone in darkness who's heavily obscured, and you can use it just fine. There's no penalties. And usually an easy way to spot these spells is they won't involve attack rolls. So Sacred Flame, there's no attack roll involved. Instead, the target makes a saving throw. So that's a pretty good clue that the line of sight thing may not apply if there's no attack roll, but look at your spell description. And if you don't see any language about being able to see the target, then that's not a requirement. It's not an assumed requirement. So if it doesn't state that it's a requirement, it's not. So you can Sacred Flame someone in the darkness all day long and you're fine. So for more on those topics, I really highly recommend the Sage Advice segment on spell targeting, as well as the Sage Advice segment on stealth and invisibility, where the rules lead for D&D, Jeremy Crawford, discusses how those rules work in the game in detail. And I'll have links to both of those in the show notes at starwalkerceos.com. All right, so we've tackled the specific example here, and we've shown how in all of these circumstances here, If anything, the GM was being way too nice and not enforcing disadvantage on roles that should have been there, or some roles that should have been just flat out impossible or automatic failures. And the way this GM was interpreting the rules, other than being a little lenient on the disadvantage and the dim light and all that stuff, was right down the line. And so if anything, what was being a little more lenient than they needed to be. So these players getting bent out of shape and upset about it are completely out of line. And, you know, maybe just don't understand how darkness and light really works in the real world, much rather how it works in the game. And, you know, that depending who you are, hearing me say, oh, this player doesn't understand how darkness and light work in the real world, you might think that sounds insulting, depending who you are. But I don't mean it that way. And it's the case that a lot of people in this day and age grow up and live their entire lives in cities. We won't even, you know, talk about not knowing where milk comes from, but they've never been in real darkness. You know, they go out at night and the streets are lit and the cars have lights and there's light pollution everywhere. And so many people have never seen true darkness. And even if they haven't spent a lot of time in it to know things that many of us instinctively know that didn't grow up in cities or have spent a lot of time outdoors at night as far as how all this works. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about that specifically later. But before we get into all of that, I want to address some of these more general questions that were asked at the beginning of this, which is, do I pay attention to the character's vision abilities like dark vision and where light is located and where it's coming from? And if I do, how do I go about keeping track of everything? And do I even think it's worth it? So first question, do I pay attention to it? I try to. I definitely try to. Not only do I want to pay attention to who has dark vision and who doesn't, and where is the light or is there light or not? And if so, where is it coming from and what quality and intensity is the light? Not only do I want to pay attention to all that for rules reasons so that I'm correctly running the game and being fair as far as how easy or difficult different things are, like trying to notice people that are hiding or trying to target things with spells and abilities or trying to fight in darkness and all that stuff. But it's also really important to remember all that stuff for your descriptions. You know, for instance, if the player characters are in a completely dark room in a dungeon and none of them have dark vision and they have a torch and they can only see 20 or 40 feet, then I shouldn't be describing things that are 120 feet away that they can't see. Or on the other hand, if I'm dealing with a player character who does have dark vision and I'm describing what they're seeing with their dark vision, I shouldn't be describing colors because dark vision doesn't see colors. It sees in black and white and shades of gray. So keeping an idea of what kind of vision the different characters have and what light is there and where it is will help your descriptions make more sense and be more interesting and evocative. And it will screw you up and it will confuse players when you describe things improperly, like if they're in a dark room and you're describing a bunch of stuff they can't really see, the players are confused and they're wondering, how can I see this if I don't have dark vision or if it's beyond the range of my dark vision? So it's definitely something that I try to pay attention to because I think it's really important for those reasons. But I'll also say that it's something that I often forget about. And there's been so many times when I'm describing something in a dungeon and I've forgotten that not all the characters can see it because they don't all have dark vision, or I've forgotten that it's beyond the range of their dark vision. So as far as how I go about keeping track of it, you know, I don't really have a great method that I use, which is maybe part of the reason why I forget it sometimes. I mostly prefer to run theater of the mind. And so I'm not aware of a fantastic way to track this when doing theater of the mind, other than maybe having like a post-it note on your DM screen or something that just reminds you to think about it. But beyond that, I'm not aware of or haven't thought of a good way to remember to keep track of this. But in fairness, I haven't tried to either. So that might be something to think about and see if I can come up with a way to better remember to do this. But right now, off the top of my head, my only idea is, like I said, put some kind of post-it note or something on my GM screen just to remind me to be mindful of it. Now, if you're using a grid, I think it becomes a little easier to remember to keep track of it and to keep track of it, if only because you have the grid and you're counting squares all the time anyway. So it's easier to remember, oh, my character can only see 60 feet or can only see, you know, 12 squares in any direction. So I think with the grid in that way, it becomes maybe a little easier to remember that. If you're using like a virtual tabletop, like Roll20, sometimes they will have tools to help with that. For instance, Roll20, if you pay for it, they have dynamic lighting, which, you know, factors in how far your character can see and messes with the fog of war to only show the player what their character can actually see. It's not perfect. It definitely has some issues as far as how that's implemented. But that can be at least helpful as a reminder that your vision is limited. Although the times I've used it, I found it more annoying than helpful. But that might be a possibility if you're using a tool that has something like that. Another thing you can easily do, for instance, with Roll20, is you can put an aura around your token that represents like an area of effect spell that's on you, like Spirit Guardians or something. So you can always use that tool to create an aura or a radius around your character that shows you how far you can see with your dark vision or how far your torchlight goes. So that's another way you could approach it if you're using Roll20 and you don't want to pay for it, that you can use with the free tools. So that's really what I've got as far as methods to try to remember this and better implement it. So if you have any other ideas, let me know and I'll be happy to share them in a future episode. And then the final question here is it even worth it? And here I got to answer this with a solid yes and no, I got to say. So first of all, I, as I said, I try to pay attention to this. I try to remember this, if only for the effect of description. So I'm giving proper descriptions. But I also think it's important to enforce the fact that those who don't have dark vision have to have a light source, because in most situations, and we'll talk about this more later, that is going to make stealth impossible. And this is something I could do a whole show on, pet peeves of things I see GMs do in actual plays and stuff that just drive me up the wall. And this is one of the big ones, is GMs who don't understand or forget this, that if your player characters are going through a dungeon or whatever, and they're carrying torches or dancing lights or light spells or whatever they're using, if they're using light sources, there's no way they're ever going to sneak up on anybody if this is a dark dungeon, because they're going to see him coming from a mile away because their light is going to precede them. So even if they're in the next room, you're going to be able to see from the next room over that's dark that, hey, there's light in that room now. Something's going on there. And none of us use light because we all have dark vision. So there must be intruders. So, you know, if you watch actual plays, count how many times you see player characters sneaking around in dungeons and successfully sneaking up on people when they're carrying around torches or the equivalent. It happens all the time. So it's something that GMs forget or overlook or just don't understand all the time. So, you know, it's good for just gameplay and mechanics and fairness. It's good to remember for that reason. If they're trying to be sneaky, it's not going to work too well if they're having to use light sources. Another great resource for this topic is a video I watched on YouTube some time ago, and I'll link this video in the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney about how torches work and about how torches are terrible light sources to use, and how those of us used to more modern sources of light like flashlights don't really understand how torches really work. And if you haven't watched this video, I highly recommend it. Because there's a lot of assumptions we make about how torches work that are flat out wrong and not how torches work. And the biggest one I remember, because I haven't watched this video in a while, that he talks about is the whole idea, if you're using a torch to see ahead of you, how you actually hold the torch behind you, not in front of you. Because having the torch in front of you, it just blinds you. All you can see is the torch. You can't see anything else. It destroys your night vision. So you actually hold the torch as far behind you as you can. And that way you can somewhat see what you're doing. But yeah, torches aren't great light sources because they blind you as much, probably more than they illuminate things. And they illuminate you for all of your enemies. So that final question is really, I feel like, the can of worms question for this episode, which is it worth it to keep track of this kind of stuff? And if so, how do we do so? So we'll talk a little bit more about that. So earlier in the show, we talked all about darkness and light. We got into some of the nitty gritty about how sight and dark vision actually work in the rules in D&D. And I talked a little bit about how it works in real life and how sometimes we get that wrong. And I'll talk some more about that in a minute. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about, you know, what I do and my thoughts about darkness and light and how and if I track it and whether or not it's worth it. So like I said before, I do try to remember it, at least as far as when I'm describing things, at the very least. You know, for instance, if I'm describing a scene and I have one PC that's using a torch to see and another PC that's using dark vision, they're going to see slightly different things. For instance, the person with dark vision isn't going to see any colors. So it's nice to remember that and describe the scene differently depending on who's looking at it. So I do try to do that, and I try to remember this as much as I can. So I thought I would share some thoughts I've been having on this topic, because this is something I've actually been thinking about quite a bit. And it's just something I think about quite a bit in general, because so often I see DMs getting darkness and light wrong. So often I see writers of novels I'm reading getting darkness and light wrong. So it's just something that's always kind of in the back of my mind. And it's something I kind of debate with myself when it comes to D&D. This whole thing of having some, you know, a lot of characters have dark vision, some of them don't. And then we have to worry about how far you can see with dark vision. And it gets kind of noodly and kind of can be a pain. And, you know, as this listener GM said, is it even worth it to worry about any of this stuff? So my first question for you about this is, assuming you use dark vision and you worry about it, what about your thoughts when it comes to the distance limitation of dark vision? Like most player characters that have dark vision, it's 60 feet. So they can see with their dark vision out for 60 feet, and that's it. My first objection to this is just from a real world conceptual standpoint, I don't understand it. I don't understand the reasoning just from a conceptual point of view of having dark vision have a limitation of 60 feet. It doesn't make any sense to me. To me, it demonstrates a complete lack of understanding of how light and vision work. I mean, I'm assuming we're talking dark vision. You know, in previous versions of the game, they called it infravision or heat vision. And so I'm assuming we're talking about, we're still seeing light. We're just seeing a different part of the spectrum. And, you know, I'm assuming we're seeing infrared or maybe it works something more like modern night vision works. Or maybe it works something like animals that can see pretty well in the dark work, like, for instance, a cat, how their eyes work. So in all those instances, it really wouldn't have anything to do with the distance that you could see. You'd be able to see as far as you can normally see. I mean, infrared doesn't travel through space any differently than other forms of the light spectrum do, or the electromagnetic spectrum. The waves go just as far. So if it's seeing infrared, it doesn't make any sense that for some reason beyond 60 feet, you can't see it. If there's a heat source 100 feet away, you would totally see it in the infrared, even if you're 100 feet away. I mean, we have infrared telescopes that look at objects across the galaxy. So that idea is just ridiculous. Now, I don't know a whole lot about how like modern dark vision, like what the military use, like how that works. I do think that there are different types. And I believe, and hopefully someone will write in that knows more about how this works. Maybe I should have researched it before I did this episode. But I don't know how really relevant it really is. But anyway, I think there are some types of dark vision that involve using a light source that is a different wavelength of light source that your dark vision picks up. So something like that, if you're using some kind of special flashlight with the dark vision, then that would make sense that has a range, like however far that light can shine that you can see. So that might make sense. Now, as far as like how animals that see well in the dark see, like for instance, a cat, which I think is what the folks of Wizards are thinking about, because they have the whole thing of dark vision doesn't see color, which is how our dark vision works and how a cat's dark vision works. Because you may be aware that in the eye, there are two types of cells that are the receptors that detect light, rods and cones. And the cones detect different colors and the rods don't. And when you're using your quote night vision, your natural night vision, when you're seeing in the dark, you're seeing primarily with your rods, which is why you don't see color in the dark. And so a cat's eye, for example, has a lot more rods and they're more densely packed than a human eye does, which is why they can see a lot better in low light than what we can. But, you know, presumably they're seeing in black and white or in shades of gray, because again, the rods don't detect colors. So it seems like that's what the folks at Wizards are kind of using for their inspiration, because they're saying that dark vision doesn't see colors. And I'm not sure, when you're talking about that kind of vision, then it makes a lot of sense that it would be limited to 60 feet. So again, any of you that have a lot of experience with the biology and physiology of eyes and how they work, specifically cat eyes or other animals that see well in the dark, that have any insight into this, I'd love to hear from you and share it with everyone. But I'm not sure that the 60 feet thing even conceptually makes it any sense. And I'm definitely not sure that the arbitrary number of 60 feet has any basis in anything that makes sense. So let me know if I'm wrong on that. But to me, it seems like there's no real world conceptual basis for dark vision having a limitation. So I can only assume that it's some kind of perceived game balance thing. Like, you know, oh, well, we don't want the elves who have dark vision to be too powerful compared to the humans that don't. So let's just limit it to 60 feet so it has limited usefulness. And that's my best guess as to why there's this distance limitation to begin with. And then we have people like the dark elves who have, quote, superior dark vision. And the only way it's superior is that they can see farther. So I think in fifth edition, it's 90 feet instead of 60, or is it 120? I don't remember. I get confused, because in previous editions, I believe the dark elves had 120 foot dark vision, but then there are other things that had 90 foot dark vision and the standard was 60. So I can't remember what it is in fifth edition. I guess I could look it up, but it doesn't matter. It's more than 60, right? That's all that matters. So again, it seems like a game balance thing. You know, if we're playing with a grid and we're counting squares, we're playing the game of squares, then my dark elf character, you know, can see an extra six squares that your high elf character can't. I mean, I guess that might come into play once or twice in the campaign. But that's really the only way I can think of that even mattering. And for DMs using theater of the mind, I mean, is this ever going to come up at all anyway? Because you're not counting squares and you're usually not getting that noodly with differences where the difference between 60 and 90 feet dark vision is going to matter, or you're even paying attention to the fact that the dark vision only sees so far. You're just kind of hand waving that away. So I'm curious, you know, what do you think about the distance limitation of dark vision? Do you even keep track of it or pay attention to it? Or do you just kind of forget about it? I've seriously considered removing it from my game and just saying, if you have dark vision, you can see as far as you can see with normal vision, and just keeping the, you know, the stipulation that you're seeing as if in dim light, which means you have disadvantage on perception checks. But just doing away with the distance limitation. The only downside of that is any actual impact it might have on the game, which, considering that most of the time we forget about it anyway, I would think would be negligible, if not zero impact on the game. And the only other thing would be, well, now that's one less cool thing that your dark elf gets that someone else doesn't get, is if there's no range limitation, then there's really no difference between a dark elf's dark vision and any other elf's dark vision. But again, I mean, that only matters if it's something you're keeping track of and it's making a difference in your game. And I think for a lot of us, if not most of us, if not all of us, we're not doing that. We're just ignoring it. So, you know, this kind of come up a couple times already in our discussion, but I think a big element of this is whether you're using a grid and miniatures or whether you're using Theater of the Mind. You know, it seems to me like in Theater of the Mind, this kind of stuff is going to be completely ignored or overlooked, if not always, almost always. But even those of you using a grid, I'm curious how often you're remembering that the dark vision only goes 60 feet and how often that actually makes any difference in an encounter or a scene that you're running. Do you think that that difference between someone with 60 foot dark vision, someone who's using a torch, someone with 90 foot or 120 foot dark vision, do you think those differences are even worth the hassle of tracking it and keep and remembering it and all that stuff? What's your experience been? So like I said, I've been considering removing the distance limitation and just saying dark vision works just like regular vision as far as how far you can see, even though this might slightly nerf races and things that get superior dark vision greater than 60 feet. But it does seem like when you look at how the different subraces are balanced, that greater dark vision isn't given much weight in the system anyway, as far as it doesn't seem to be considered a big deal as far as making a character more powerful anyway. And in fact, I'm pretty sure if you look in the Monster Manual, when you're looking at, or not the Monster Manual, in the DMG, when you're looking at creating custom monsters, giving a monster dark vision doesn't have any impact on its CR whatsoever. So yeah, I just checked to make sure I know what I'm talking about here. So if you look on page 279 of the DMG, where we're talking about creating custom monsters, step 19 senses, it says blind sight, dark vision, tremor sense, and true sight have no bearing on a monster's challenge rating. So, you know, if giving a monster blind sight doesn't affect its challenge rating, then I don't know that we need to concern ourselves with the difference between a PC with 60 foot dark vision and one with 120 or 90 foot dark vision. It doesn't seem like it's a very big deal. So what about the fact that dark vision doesn't involve color, that when you're using dark vision, you're not seeing any colors? This is something I try to remember to describe, or at the very least to remember not to describe, like not to tell someone what color someone's cloak is if they're using dark vision, because they don't know. Do you remember this? Do you keep track of this? Is this something that you worry about as a GM, the fact that those using dark vision can't see color? And if you do, has it ever mattered? Has there ever been an encounter or a scene that played out differently, or that there was some kind of consequence or impact because a player character couldn't see color? I feel like, and I could be wrong, but I feel like you'd have to design a scene to make it matter. Like I'd have to sit down and say, I'm going to design an encounter where it's going to matter that the player characters can't see color. I feel like that's the only way it would ever matter, but definitely let me know if it's ever mattered in your game, especially if you didn't design it to matter. Now, the thing that I think is more interesting and more broadly relevant and that does matter, but yet is probably forgotten, ignored, or misunderstood a lot is, you know, and we've touched on this already, is do you think about the fact that any light that is present is going to hamper or completely negate the character's dark vision? Just like how if you're in a brightly lit room and you turn off all the lights for a minute or two, you can't see anything. You can't see your hand in front of your face because it takes your eyes time to adjust. So it makes sense that a character using dark vision isn't going to be able to benefit from that if they're in bright light. It's like, think about your cat, right? You look at their eyes when they're outside in the middle of the day and their pupils are like slits, right? They're barely open at all. But you look at a cat's eyes at night and those pupils are wide open. Now, animals like cats, I'll bet, have a much faster pupil response than we do. Our sight's pretty terrible. So they probably can transition much more quickly than what we can. But, you know, your player characters aren't cats for the most part. So, you know, do you think about that? And do you have that impact your games? The fact that the party's marching down the road with a torch, well, all those people with dark vision in the torchlight, their dark vision is effectively useless because they're in torchlight. All right. So I'm really curious to hear from you guys how you approach this and whether you worry about any of this. I suspect that the majority of GMs I hear from are going to say, I never think about this. I never worry about it. Maybe I should, but I don't. So be interesting to see if I'm right about that. So I thought I would wrap up this discussion today with I'm going to call this things that city folk often get wrong about darkness, vision, light, and night, and all that good stuff. So as someone who grew up on a farm, in the middle of nowhere, far from city lights, and has also camped a lot and done a lot of stuff outdoors at night without light. Here are some common mistakes that I see made all the time, not just by GMs, but I see it made in movies. I see it made in novels all the time. This ruined Game of Thrones for me when I tried to read that first book. I think it was called Game of Thrones. I can't remember, but the first book in the series. Martin had no concept of how this works. He had characters out in the woods at night. First of all, able to see and ride horses and do all these things you wouldn't be able to do in the woods at night. And second of all, describing the colors of characters' clothing that they're seeing in the dark. First of all, they're seeing it in the dark. And second of all, they're seeing color in the dark, which we've already discussed. You can't see color in the dark. Just kick me out of the story, like blatant mistakes like that. So I see these mistakes made all the time. So here are some of my pet peeves or some things I see people get wrong that you may not be aware of or you may just not think about. And if you do think about this, it will make your games more realistic. Because even if you don't think about it, a player might. And if they do, it's going to kick them out of the story because you're not being realistic. So first off, before I go into this, I just want to head off some objections I might get at the pass here. There's going to be people that say, why does this matter? This doesn't matter. And it does matter. And a perfect example of this is something we'll see in science fiction and fantasy. For those of us that read those kinds of books or watch those kinds of TV shows or movies, you probably know, even if you've never thought about it, that you know, we can, as an audience, we can accept a lot of fantastic stuff. You know, so I can watch The Lord of the Rings and accept that there's elves and hobbits and dwarves, and that there's magic and there's magic rings and all this stuff. Or I can watch Star Trek and I can accept that there's warp drive and transporters and all this stuff. And I'll buy into that. I'll go along with you on that ride and accept that that stuff is real. Even Star Wars, which is the hardest, right? Lightsabers and the hyperdrive and the force and all this stuff. Like, we can accept that. Like, okay, fine. I'll suspend my disbelief. I'll believe in wizards in space with magic powers and glowing laser swords. I'll go along with you on that, right? And we'll do that. Those of us that like those kinds of stories. But the one thing that you can't get wrong is human nature. The one thing you can't get wrong is your characters, your characterization. So we can have this totally fantastic story about knights and dragons and unicorns and everything else. But if the main character does something that doesn't seem realistic, if they suddenly change, you know, overnight in a way that doesn't seem realistic, or they make a decision that doesn't fit their character, we won't buy it. And it'll kick us out of the story and it'll ruin it for us. There's a perfect example of this. My wife and I have been watching Timeless, which is a show I sort of enjoyed in the first season and am not really enjoying it all in the second season. It's jumped a lot of sharks, but it's a perfect example of this because this is a show about time travel, which is, as far as we know, impossible, right? They're traveling back in the past and altering things and all this stuff, you know, which is completely unrealistic. But we're buying that because we want to enjoy the show. So we're like, okay, for the sake of this show, we'll accept that time travel is possible. We'll accept that this highly improbable seeming time machine actually works. Okay. But what I can't accept is when the characters do things that are completely out of character. And in the last episode we watched, there are numerous instances of characters doing things because the writers were lazy and they wanted something to happen for the plot or for this cool moment or this moment they thought was cool, but they were completely violating the characters they'd established to do it. They were having these characters do things that we as an audience don't believe that character would ever do or don't believe that character would ever say. So, you know, in science fiction or fantasy, we can have these totally improbable worlds and all this crazy stuff happening, but you got to get the characters right. The characters have got to be believable. And I think the reason for that is we need something to anchor us, right? Unless we want to just watch something completely ridiculous, like say Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where you don't suspend disbelief for a moment because it's so ridiculous. Unless you want something like that, we want something where we can suspend disbelief, where we can get pulled in by the story and experience it and believe it. And this is very true in your role-playing game. So even though, you know, we're playing D&D and there's all this magic and all this, you know, beholders and crap that could never really exist and are pretty silly when you think about it, that's okay as long as you have some touchstones of reality. So in storytelling, whether movies or books, that's the characters. The characters have to feel real and have to make sense and have to be human and fit our understanding of what a human is. So that's good to get right in your role-playing games too. But another way that you can nail this realism to have better suspension of disbelief and better engagement from your players is to get things like light and vision right, or at least not get them egregiously wrong. So I do think this stuff is really important. And, you know, maybe you're a GM who spent your whole life in the city and you don't really understand this, you don't really care about this. But if you've got a player who maybe has done a lot of camping or grew up in the country or for whatever reason and spent a lot of time outside at night, you're going to kick them out of the story every time you describe something that doesn't make sense. So let's go through a few of these things that I see happening that don't make sense, and there are things we can be mindful of. So first of all, let's talk about forests at night. This is a common culprit. This is where George Martin screwed the pooch in his book. So forests, first of all, are dark, capital dark, at night. If there's any canopy at all, if the canopy, which is to say the trees above you, are at all thick, are blocking much of the sky at all, it's going to be super dark, even on a full moon, even with the stars out. Underneath the trees, it's going to be black. It's going to be complete darkness. You're not going to have any light from the moon, the stars, etc. At least not enough that you're going to be able to see anything. You might look up through the trees and see light in the sky from the stars. But as far as you on the ground, seeing where you're stepping and what's in front of you, you're not going to be able to see anything. Navigating a forest in the dark, even with a little bit of light, even with what we'd call in D&D dim light, is really difficult and really, really treacherous. You're going to constantly be tripping on things like roots and rocks that you can't see beneath your feet. You're going to constantly be getting caught in underbrush. You know, if a plant has thorns, you're not going to be able to see the thorns, and they're going to catch your clothing and rip your clothing or rip your skin. There's just a million things like snake holes or rabbit holes that you're not going to be able to see. You're going to step in them. You're going to sprain your ankle. You're going to break your ankle, break your leg, hit your head on stuff. I mean, yeah, you're not going to be making good time through the forest in the dark, and chances are really good you're going to end up injuring yourself. It's also really easy to get lost and really hard to navigate in a forest in the dark. Also, again, you can't see color in the dark by moonlight. Especially, you know, maybe something right in front of your face, you might be able to make out some color, but anything like at all, you know, more than a couple feet away, you're not going to see any colors. You're not going to see what color the guard's cloak is. You'll see if it's a light color or a dark color, and that's about it. When you're out at night and you're using a torch or you're by a campfire or something like that, that light source is going to make a radius of light that you can see. And within that radius, you're going to be able to see pretty well, but you're not going to be able to see anything outside of the light. When you look beyond the light of your campfire or your torch, you're just going to see black. You're not going to be able to see anything at all. So there's no chance to notice someone hiding in the darkness unless you hear them. But as far as seeing them, there's no chance. And this is reflected in the rules of D&D, because remember, we said that someone who is in complete darkness is considered heavily obscured, which means you have no sight of them and it's not possible to see them. So it's even reflected in the rules. Now, conversely, although you can't see anything from your campfire beyond the light of your campfire, everything outside of the light of your campfire can see you clear as day and can see your fire, if not you, from very far away, from miles upon miles away, especially if someone's up on a mountaintop and you're on the level far mile, they can see your fire for miles and miles. And even if they don't have direct line of sight to your fire, they will see the glow in the treetops or in the sky above it. Or if you're camped next to a cliff, they'll see the glow of the firelight on the cliff, even if they're too far away to see the fire or the fire is blocked by trees or whatever. So same thing in a dungeon. You know, if you're carrying a torch through the dungeon, everybody knows you're there. Rooms away, they can, because again, a lot of us haven't experienced true darkness, like being in a cave or something where there's literally zero light. But when you're in a situation like that, your eyes adjust more and more the more time goes on, and you can detect less and less light. And when you've been in total darkness for long enough and your eyes are completely adjusted, you can see a very faint light from very far away, much farther than you would believe if you haven't been in that situation. So you're totally giving yourself away when you're traveling in darkness with a light source. Also, keep in mind that the transition from light to darkness takes time, and it takes a lot of time, especially if you're talking combat rounds that are 6 seconds long. You're talking in the span of an entire normal D&D combat, your eyes wouldn't have adjusted to the darkness yet. So if the player characters are, let's say they're in camp and they've got torches and a campfire, so they've got bright light, and something happens that puts out all their light, not even a magical darkness, just the light's gone. And then combat happens for the entirety of that combat, the characters are completely blind, because it's going to take longer than, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60 seconds for their eyes to adjust to the dark enough that they can really see anything at all. So that's something else to keep in mind. So, you know, for those of you that live in the city and don't have experience, you know, camping or hiking at night or whatever, here's an example that you do have experience with to kind of help you see this point. So you've probably noticed if you're in a brightly lit room at night, if you look and it's completely dark outside, so this might even be hard for someone in a city because it's not dark outside. But if you've ever been in a house at night, and it's lit and it's completely dark outside, when you look at the window, unless you're standing right at the window, but if you look at a window from like a few feet away, it's just black. You can't see anything. And even if you put your face right against the window looking out, all you can see is a few feet that the light from the window illuminates outside. You can't see anything past that. So, you know, same kind of thing if you're in a dungeon with a torch or you're in camping in the woods with a campfire. Anything that's in the total darkness, you can't see at all. And on the flip side, if you've, you know, ever been walking out at night and people, you know, have lights on in their houses and they don't have curtains or blinds or whatever closed, you can see inside the house perfectly, greatly, even better than you can during the day, right? And so it's the same thing, you know, something out in the dark watching you at your campfire or watching you in the dungeon with your torch, they can see you perfectly and from very far away. So it's the same principle that applies there. And finally, the last way people screw this up all the time is when it comes to riding horses. Riding a horse at night is a great way to hurt and or kill your horse. Your horse doesn't have dark vision. Even if your character has dark vision, your horse doesn't. So your horse is going to be tripping on that stuff in the woods. Even on a road, there could be a rock on the road or a stick or a hole, a pothole or whatever. Your horse steps in that, breaks its leg, and now you're down a horse. So you see this all the time, people galloping their horses at night, you know, and yeah. And all the stuff about torches, you know, apply with horses too. Just thinking, oh, well, I'm going to ride my horse with a torch. It's like, well, your horse might be able to see the ground directly beneath his feet, but he's not going to see what's coming. So it's not really going to help your horse a whole lot. So yes, your horse can't see at night, and a horse running around that can't see is going to be a dead horse pretty soon. If only because you're going to have to kill it because it's going to break its leg. So there are the big ones I see. So if there's some that I missed that you see, mistakes you see made, whether in games or, you know, stories or whatever, be sure to let me know and share them with me, and I can share them with the other listeners. And, you know, we're not going to get it right all the time. And, you know, the goal here isn't to be perfect and get all this stuff perfectly right all the time. But I do think it's important to understand how it works and to be mindful of it, because not only will it make your descriptions more evocative and hold water if the players actually engage with the description and think about it and won't start falling apart and not making sense. So not only will your descriptions be better, but it will have mechanical impact, and it will make things that would have been easier more difficult, might make things that would have been difficult easier, you know, because, you know, a lot of this we've been talking from the perspective of the player characters are the ones with the light, and they're the ones being the idiots in the dark with the light. But they can turn it around, and maybe it's a camp of bandits with a campfire, and the player characters are out in the dark and sneaking up on the bandits, and they can use all this stuff to their advantage. So I guess my last, you know, kind of nutshell, if you don't take anything else from this thing, is if you are in the dark with a light, you're not sneaking up on anyone or anything that isn't perhaps blind. I guess if they're blind, they don't use vision at all, you might be able to sneak up on them. But if they use vision, you're not going to sneak up on anybody. All right, well, that is going to wrap it up for episode 227 of Game Master's Journey. If you'd like to get a hold of me, there are a lot of great ways to do so. You can email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker, and you can call my voicemail 951-GMJ-LEX-1. That's 951-465-5391. I'd love to hear from you. What do you think about today's topic? How much attention do you pay to things like dark vision and how far you can see with dark vision and light and whether or not you can see and the difficulties that it presents when traveling at night or investigating a dungeon that isn't lit and things like that. How much attention do you pay to this? What are your stories of times when this has really mattered and maybe made the difference in an encounter, made a otherwise easy encounter hard or even impossible? I'd love to hear your stories and your anecdotes. What do you think about the limitation on dark vision as far as you can only see 60 feet? Have you, like me, considered just doing away with that to simplify your life? And because it doesn't hardly ever seem to matter. And if you've done it, did it have any impact on your game? Did it make a difference other than just making things easier and quicker? Did the players like it? Let me know what you think. I'd love to hear from you. So you can find the show notes for this episode at starwalkerceos.com/gamemastersjourney. Again, I'll have some links in there to some resources I talked about today's video on YouTube about using torches, some stuff from Sage Advice about how stealth and invisibility and spell targeting and all this kind of stuff works. So definitely check that out for more information. Also in the show notes, you can find links to our forum, our Google+, and our Discord, where you can network with other listener GMs and share your ideas, your questions, your stories, share your homebrew settings for your game, share your relics you're coming up with for those of you that got my relic supplement, and just hang out with other listener GMs. If you enjoy this podcast and you'd like to help support the show, you can find all the ways to do so at starwalkerceos.com/support. And there's even some options there that won't cost you anything. The best way that you can support the show and my RPG endeavors, though, is to check out Relics of Power, which is my latest D&D supplement. You can also check out my adventure, The Trickster's Labyrinth. You can find both of those at starwalkerceos.com/store. And finally, you can follow the link in the show notes to get yourself a Game Master's Journey t-shirt if you'd like. And I really appreciate everyone who helps support the show, however you do so. I hope that you have a chance to play your favorite RPG this week. I hope you have a chance to run your favorite RPG. I'll be back soon with another episode of Game Master's Journey. Until then, game on in the dark.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music, courtesy of Cloudwalker, Transboy, Renfield, Stanko, and Ish. See the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.